No, he didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.
And welcome everybody to Locked On iRacing, a special iRacing podcast from Australia. I'm Peter Wilkinson. I'm joined tonight by Braden Martin and Darcy. I'm sure Darcy will make some cameos in here. Darcy is Braden's dog, but I'm also joined by the number one V8 supercar driver in the Banter Alliance, Chasty. How you going, mate? James Chastanoff, I should say.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's weird hearing my actual name when it comes to the sim community. Normally, it is just Chasty. So,
Chasty, happy to be here. Best. I think that's how Shervo calls him. He's got nothing but good words to say about you, so we'll get straight into that. How are you tonight, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. It's a bit hot here in Melbourne, which is a bit different. But we're encountering a bit of a heat wave. But apart from that, trying to keep cool and not doing too badly.
Every time I hear about your state, it's either on fire, it's too hot, it's broken because of storms. Queensland's supposed to be the stupid state. What are you doing?
Outclassing you in every parameter.
Apparently.
Even the ones you don't want.
We prepared for rain and iRacing by having 200 mils on Monday. So, you know, we had that. So there you go. I want to quickly jump into Braden and actually get him to talk. How are you, mate?
Good. Equally as hot as Chasty. I think he's obviously getting our weather after we get it over here in SA. And I'm sorry to tell you, Chasty, it's not getting any cooler because it's 40 degrees for the next couple of days as well. So
yeah,
have fun with
that's
that.
The forecast. Yeah, it's the forecast. It's generally, it's pretty much a flow on. So if I ever need to know what the weather's going to be, I should always just ask you guys.
All I hear is Braden gives Chasty his sloppy seconds. That's all I heard out of that. But anyway. Class podcast from the start. Let's go, everyone. Obviously, Tuesday was a thing which turned into Wednesday morning by the time we actually got it. But the season 2 2024 patch did drop. And along with that, the name Tempest, which we publicly went hard with on the last episode of the new weather system, has also been dropped as well to just now it's the weather, iRacing weather system. But we all got to have fun driving wet cars around wet tracks, and it got very moist in lots of circles. Lots of people coming back to the sim I have seen as well. So just in my stream today, when Alex John popped in and said, I think I need to resub and get back in. A few people popping in the Discord saying the same thing. But we're here tonight to talk about our first thoughts, and it'll go long. We've got no notes, but we have got comments from you in the audience. We have a few people here that replied to us on Facebook. We've also got a few people in the Discord that have got some long ones to read, which I'll get someone else to read when we get to them. But overall, Chasty, you've been driving in the wet the last couple of days. You're a bit of an expert at all things driving, I should say. So what have you found with driving in the wet on iRacing so far? What's first impressions?
First impressions, the graphical representation that they've put out for the puddles has just been phenomenal. I was always worried about how they were going to implement viewing the puddles, and just in a sort of case of having to try and render reflections in that, the only way to show puddles is to show reflections and how much that can have a toll on your performance. And that was pretty much the lead up to the whole system was, will I need to upgrade my computer? And yep. Thankfully, their claims of about 10% performance decrease seems to be about true. And even though my old 1080 Ti is getting a bit on now, it's still performing fairly well.
So you're running a 1080 with iRacing. How scared were you, honestly, going into Tuesday night, Wednesday morning?
Look, to be honest, it's getting pretty old, that card, and I have been thinking about an upgrade, so I thought it might be a good excuse to finally bite the bullet and get something a little bit more new and shiny. But at the moment, it's actually holding up fairly well, so I don't really have that excuse just yet.
You can still use the excuse, but Braden, how have you found the actual, the whole graphical frames per second that we're getting with this compared to what it was before? I've found it pretty consistent, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky to have a pretty hefty setup at the moment, which is nice. Generally, I haven't really noticed any real loss of frames at all, to be honest. Like, we were doing some driving last night, and I was still getting 164, and I have my things locked at 165, and it was at times locked at 165. So obviously I haven't done any racing with big fields yet or any of the new tracks, for example, to really, I suppose, test it out and really find where the limit is. But from all reports, I haven't seen one person anywhere complain about the hit being too much. So they've obviously done a really good job, however they've set up the code to make it not too intensive on the hardware, which is what a lot of people were worried about. Lots of memes going around and stuff before Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. All so far seem to have not really had any issues. So yeah, pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm really shocked at the optimization they've done with this, because you talk about the paddles chassis, the reflections, and it does make a difference. You can actually tweak the reflections in the settings, but on full amount for the reflections, the paddles look amazing for starters, which makes the whole track and the whole thing look amazing, but it really doesn't take any hit. You talk about with fields, I've done a few races in the LMP2 and in the wet and wild and the fun in the wet or whatever it's called ones, and you we'll talk about the spray from cars in a sec, but or I'm sure we will, but even with all those cars spinning and the spray everywhere, you would think it would, the physics alone would start killing your computer, but hasn't seen any kind of slowdown at all. And you look at the frames, I was doing Le Mans at 80 or 90 quite easily, no matter how many cars were around me. It just didn't seem to take any performances, which was absolutely amazing. Chassis, what have you done in the sim so far with weather affected racing at the moment?
So just a little bit of everything as much as I can. Grabbed the new Super Formula Lite, gave that a good spin around the new Misano circuit. That car is phenomenal, especially in the wet. I haven't done too much dry driving with it just yet, however, as most of the sessions have been wet, and that's sort of the whole focus of it. But that car, really impressive. I've done some
what's
Toyota
compared to just quickly on Sorry. That car. What's it compared to? You've driven a fair bit of open wheeler stuff in the past.
Yeah, well, I'm actually trying to build up to it at the moment, so I'm trying to work towards getting into the Super Formulas a bit more. And that car's a very good middle ground between the F4 and the Super Formula. Probably closer to the F4 more than the Super Formula. It gives you a little bit more time to think about what's actually going on, whereas the Super Formula will just go really quick, and it takes a bit of getting used to how fast that car is moving. But the Super Formula Lite, it's a very good sort of middle ground.
Especially when you can't get the Super Formula off the line, that makes it very difficult.
Yeah, always practice your starts before you start racing. The problem I had was I was a little bit confident. So for anyone who doesn't know, one of my streams didn't last particularly long before I had a big accident. I just got a new wheel where I was working the clutch and a line locker using some clutch paddles on the wheel, which I hadn't used for the first time. And the first time I'd started this car, I did a race, used my normal clutch and my pedal, got a great launch, drove away and just led the whole way through. It wasn't the highest strength of field or anything, but the start sort of set it up. So with a little bit of nervousness trying to use the pedals on the wheel, was really focusing on how I was going to control the pedals on the wheel and forgot to put it into first gear. So I dropped the clutch in neutral and just revved the guts out of it. Didn't go anywhere. So
I have heard neutral is the fastest way to drive these cars. So yeah, it's good work, mate. Good work.
Way to get the revs up, to be honest. So yeah, that
burn the fuel.
It was singing. Yeah, and I was getting the fuel down too.
I'm glad it's just not me who does stupid things like that. Thanks, Chassis, for making me feel human and able to be at your level one day, maybe.
It was a very humbling and sobering moment. Where suddenly it's not all sunshine and rainbows.
Speaking of sunshine and rainbows, how many times have you jumped in and heard someone say, hey, how do we put the wets on this car at the starting grid?
I actually haven't heard it too much, which is surprising. Waiting for all the calls about whether I'll need to stop in this race or anything. So that's usually one that pops up all the time. But
we did a Nords race today, and we were doing the start, the rolling start, and one of the GT3 guys is like, oh, can I put wets on this thing right now? I just got to change the dial, don't I? And it's wets all of a sudden. And everyone's like, oh, my God, you need to pit. He goes, oh, no, I'll see how I can go. He said, mate, you're not even going to get to the pits at the way, with the way this thing runs. And he goes, oh, yeah, you're right. I can't get it above 100 miles an hour or whatever it was. And crawled into the pit lane in the rolling start and then came out the back of the 86s and blitzed us. So, yeah, it's happened a few times. And I think there's, I want to talk about the tyres themselves a bit later, but it's interesting that that first half a lap of Nords is fun to watch when people don't know what they're doing with wets, or even when they do know what they're doing with wets. But what races have you done, Braden? Are you pretty much been doing what Chassis's been doing? Is that where you're at the moment?
To be honest, it's been like one of the busiest weeks of the year at work this week. It was probably like the worst possible time for rain to come out. So I haven't actually really done any racing.
You did a bit of Sebring with us last night, didn't you?
Yeah. So the Wednesday night when I finally managed to get home from work, we jumped in and did a bit of a test session for Sebring in the LMP2, which was pretty fun. It was very like I streamed it and I went back and watched, and it was just funny looking at my face like, oh, it's raining, and like how I'm trying to process everything, and you know, got a pretty big smile on my face when I'm trying to figure it all out. So that was pretty cool. It was interesting. It was like, I don't know how to explain it. It wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't easy. I was just expecting to be really, really bad at it, to be honest. Like, I definitely feel like the addition of rain is like tailor-made to two kinds of people. People with lots of real-world racing experience are going to be able to be probably pretty good. Like, I've never researched what it means to race in the rain. I've never done karting. I've never done any, you know, driving outside of the sim, apart from, you know, some go-kart days here and there. Over the course of my life, at, you know, hire carts and stuff. And the other group of people is probably people who aren't all that brave under brakes and take it easy and just sort of manage their way through the race. And I probably don't fit into that category either, because normally if I'm trying to learn something new, it's not like slowly build up the pace and figure it out. It's normally just try and drive as fast as I can and crash 450 times, and then eventually I find where my limit is. So I was a bit concerned, to be honest, because, yeah, I didn't fit into either of those two categories that should, you know, maybe find the rain stuff easy. But it was easier than I thought. It was really cool having to find different lines and it not being the same every single time you came around the track. But for me, trying to find like where the crossover is between, okay, I need to be off the racing line and now it's dry enough to be on the racing line, and what corners are slippery and which corners are not, I still felt like I was very far off. Like, I felt like I was doing good, and then I break one time in the same spot I thought I was breaking last time, and then I just slide off into the wall. So yeah, that was a bit of an eye opener. And then last night I jumped in and just did a little bit of running with the Banter Alliance guys. We did a little practice and quali and a little 10-minute race in the F4 at Phillip Island, which was cool. I think Darren might have set up the server and he had it so it started wet. Then qualifying, it was kind of wet. And then the race was like borderline being able to start on slicks. I think Chasty did start on slicks. And then it started to rain. And it was just interesting. Like, it was definitely quicker on the slicks for those first couple of laps. Like, Chasty put like 5 seconds on me in the two laps that he was out on slicks. But obviously not dry enough to stay on them. And then it started raining pretty severely, which was, yeah, interesting. Like, Chasty and I were pretty much like lap for lap most of the time in practice, at like really close times doing. Yeah, it was interesting. It's just very different. It's really, unless you've done it, which hopefully lots of people out there have, it's kind of hard to explain.
Yeah, I think so. We had the server at Sebring set up the other night, and I particularly went in because all the races I've done so far in the, not officials, but the actual week 13 stuff have been either wet or dry, or basically all been wet the whole way through. And we wanted to experience that dry, the transition between dry to wet and then wet to dry again. And we set the server up Sebring. For some reason, LMP2s and 86s go really well on the track at Sebring together. So that's what we did. And it was dry. Then it got a little bit rain, and then it was heavy rain right before the end, and then it stopped. And then we had quali in the race, and the gap between quali and race, I was shocked at how it still kept the track conditions, but made it obviously the time it worked out where it should be. And we came back, and the quali was still wet, but it wasn't as wet as it was. But then race time, like you said, it was. We had half the field on. We had all of us pretty much start on slicks, and then Matty Mites started on wets, and he had the advantage for the first two laps, and then he didn't have the advantage for the next couple of laps. So this strategy and whole making a decision and being so different and making you think about stuff is that's the part of it I love the most, that transition part of it, which I want to talk in a sec. But it just is a level playing field. Like you've got to really be on the ball, and you've got to be watching what's going on. I know Race Labs and all those people are going to put in a weather overlay so you can see the rain come across, but you've really got to just watch the sky. And then the transition between not raining and raining is a bit off-putting on the windscreen. But yeah, Braden, what do you want to bring up?
It's interesting as well. Like it's a big dramatic change in lap times, like just in one lap. Like sometimes, like you would be doing a lap and you feel like you're starting to get a little bit more grip, and you look at your relative and you're like a second a lap quicker than your previous lap already. Like it's quite dramatic. So like finding that sort of changeover point is going to be super crucial, and especially in sprint races, if there's a bit of a crossover in a sprint race where the field might be pretty close and you might gain 3, 4 seconds, 5 seconds if someone stays out a lap or two too long. So it's gonna definitely add another element to the racing, which for a lot of us who are just concentrating hard enough on staying on the track and making sure we don't make any mistakes and not giving into that nervous, anxious pressure we have, having to now think about that as well is going to overload some brains, I think.
Yeah, before I get to Chastity's thoughts on that transition, because obviously they did it the other night, The best way I can describe it is rain, just you need the concentration. Like if you're racing in the dry, we often do it, especially when you're streaming, you're looking at chat, you're doing this, you're doing that. You're just having a bit of fun because you're just hitting the racing line. There's nothing really to take your mind off it. But in the wet, you have to concentrate. The moment you look at chat quickly or you think, oh yeah, I've got this, it bites you in the ass for some unknown reason, whether it's a puddle you've just gone across the wrong way. Or I want to talk about the tires, like I said, in a sec, but going out on wets and you're confident, but then your tires aren't warm enough yet. And that first probably 2 or 3 minutes on cold tires in the wet is not as bad as slicks, but it's not easy. And then you get confident, then you start hitting your things and you just make one little mistake and you're gone. But Chastity, you had a bit of fun with the transition from wet to dry and dry to wet the other night. How did you find that part of it?
I found it quite interesting, actually, going back to that whole warming up your wet tires thing, starting on the slicks and then going to wets as it got wetter. So my thought process in that short space of time, I knew it probably was going to bite me in such a short race, but I always like the idea that you should always be on the right tire for the conditions. But what I found switching to the wets was it was quite difficult to get the tires up to temperature. And I noticed because Braden was closing up quite quickly on me, so I was able to watch how fast he was going. And just him being able to start on the wets, and it was in that sort of transition phase where the track was still kind of wet. So the slicks were working, but it wasn't so bad that I guess the wets were probably not super overheating. By the time the rain then came in, because he had the wets on already, it was much easier for him to adapt to the conditions. Whereas once I went to the wets, that first lap where I had basically no grip, I was trying to get the heat into it, was a nightmare. And I could see Braden's braking markers, especially at Phillip Island going into Honda, the first hairpin. It's a big braking zone. And I could just see him either once he passed me, he was pulling away. When he was closing up on me, I could see him really closing up on me in those particular corners. So it struck me, yeah, very interesting about maybe you want to sort of use the slicks up to, like, for as long as you can as the rain's coming in. But then if you wait too long, and you get onto the wets, it might be okay when you come in from the slicks. So the slicks might be still okay to drive on when you do come in, but you might miss that window where the track is dry enough that you can get the wets on and then get them up to temperature a little bit quicker. And then when the rain really starts coming in, you've already got that temperature in the tire. So it's easy to get the temperature in the tire while it's still a little bit dry.
And it was quite dramatic. Like, I think it was a good like 6 seconds that I was sort of behind, and then within four or five corners, like, it was half of that. Like, it was like a massive difference in the amount of performance that you would have through the corners. And probably as soon as you probably went into that first turn, you probably lost a lot of confidence in what you had underneath you as well, which obviously slows you down even more. And yeah, it was super obvious that there was a massive imbalance in tire performance between our two cars, especially as, like I said before, our lap times were pretty much similar when we were running on similar stuff. So it was really interesting because, like I said, it's just that choice of one more lap or one less lap could make or break your race.
Yeah, that's right.
We did set up the Sebring server, and I did some practice in the afternoon, and I went out, I did the opposite of what we were talking about before. My setup was actually set for wets. I didn't realize I went out with dries. Went out with wets in the dry. And even that was, I was about about 6 to 7 seconds off the pace at Sebring. And I couldn't work out why. I just thought I was losing concentration or wasn't paying attention or whatever it was. But then I pulled in 11 laps, my tires were down to 42% for starters after 11 laps in the dry with the wets. And there was just no, I couldn't drive it by the end of it. It was amazing just that how much effort they've put into that side of it, where you are going to have to, if you're in the opposite situation to what you're in, Chasty, and it did dry out all of a sudden, Braden would have been massively disadvantaged and he'd have to pit eventually just to get on slicks. Because his tyres, if he can't push on any longer, because A, he's losing time, and tyres are going to wear out very quickly as well.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. It's, very interesting to see how we're going to have to balance that. And to be honest, I think that iRacing have done a good job in balancing that. So there is that trade-off. And I think if they don't quite get that right, then there's going to be scenarios where there's always sort of going to be that video game style of the system works in a certain way. Then everyone has to do these certain things in order to be competitive. But I think initially, I guess, it's only been a couple of days that we've had it, so it's really hard to tell. But initially, I'm seeing on track makes sense to me. It makes sense to reality. So you kind of have to put your engineering brain on a little bit and actually think about what you're actually doing. And it's quite a testament to them that they've managed. I guess, look, they've taken a long time, so they've tested the hell out of this thing.
They've done
a very good job.
I love how they've promoted this, where they gave the ambassadors, the streaming ambassadors, the 3 to 4 days early access, and then all the videos came out of, oh my god, this is chaos, because they put them in the service together with the wettest conditions possible, and you got all these drivers that everyone knows and loves and trusts showing their highlight videos of them spinning across the grass and showing how difficult the race it is, and everyone collectively just went, oh my god, what are we in for? But as Braden said before, we jumped in, and as you just mentioned, it clicked in your brain of, this is how I should do it, this is how I've been told to do it, stay off the slick part of the track, and iRacing's pushing this side of it as well leading up to it, stay off that for the braking areas, you know, use the lines that you don't usually use and stuff like that. And it did feel very natural. The one thing when I streamed the first lot of stuff is all the comments were, it doesn't feel like you're spinning. I hardly spun at all. And they're like, it mustn't be as bad as they were making out in these videos as what they thought it was. Everyone else was spinning out, but I was able to, because I was like Braden, I'd brake really early. I take my time, and I often don't hit apexes. So I was perfectly set up for wet racing. So we were good to go, and yeah.
We refer to that as the Roy Clark line.
Hey, it's fast, mate. We've generally been waiting for this all our lives. It's our time to shine, finally.
That's exactly what he's been saying.
I have never moved up the field more than I have in these last couple of days. It's been great. I love it. But yeah, so that's what I was trying to say yesterday or the day before when I was streaming. It's hard enough learning this whole new mechanic of rain I was then also learning the whole new mechanic of Nords, because I haven't raced that in probably a year and a half. So I didn't know which corner was going where. It added so much extra tension to the racing. But I just love how brilliantly, especially when you get over some of the back stuff, where the puddles sit on the track. And that all makes sense to you as well. So you're sitting there going, okay, I'm not going to hit that apex because that's got a big dip in it and stuff like that. People are telling me to try Bathurst because apparently Bathurst is really good in the wet as well in the GT3, but I'll save that one for a little while.
Yeah, I missed out on it because I was busy that night, but our boys actually ran a monsoon-level amount of rain at Bathurst for an hour.
Yeah,
they were saying that the area around the grate became a lake. Oh, like, wow. It just filled up. The whole thing just filled up with water. And that's something that I'm definitely going to have to try out at some point.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to come home today and I wanted to test the typical Bathurst rain, which is, especially for the 1000, is hot, sunny weather, and then all of a sudden monsoonal rain for about a 10, 15, 20-minute period, and then it goes back to hot and sunny again. I want to do that because I think that'll be the most realistic experience in the world. But there's all these kind of things we can do. Like, even that server I set up the other night, I didn't imagine how good it was going to end at the end when we did the race. Like, the tension on it where I had Matty Mites, like Tim and J-Mac, faster than me, obviously, they made simple mistakes where J-Mac just hit a puddle. There was one puddle left on Sebring on this one little bit of straight, and he hit it and he spun her out on these slicks. Tim, I think at the hairpin, might have gone too far and spun himself out as well because he was on slicks and hit the wrong part. But I was obviously steadier and I got around, and then Matty Mites had a 10-second lead, but then I could see it coming back and I got more confident, and you see him starting to make mistakes because his wets were starting to overheat and he was starting to come back, and I think it would have only been one or two more laps and I would have closed that 6-second gap it was right down to a finish. And the races we can see with stuff like this, even in just IMSA, because every single session is going to be different apparently from here on out, the potential things we're going to see is going to be great. And I can't wait for it to come to things like supercars and all the other car racing, all the other things as well. The one thing we talked about is intermediates. If they're going to go that far, I don't know. Do you reckon they'll go that far, Braden?
Oh, if it makes sense for the car, I'm sure they will at some point. Like, I'm sure they can get an intermediate on their Mercedes F1 cars and stuff like that. But I don't know how many series apart from Formula One and stuff like that run intermediates, to be honest. Maybe I'm just oblivious to it, but I don't know how many do.
Yeah, maybe not many.
I think the majority of their wets are intermediates anyway.
Okay.
It's more about the water clearing you get on those full wets these days. It's kind of a mute point, sort of like Formula One. As soon as they start to go to the wet tire compound, there's too much spray and they can't see anything and they red flag the session anyway. And it's usually not until they get back to intermediate weather that they actually run again. So
let's talk about the spray. It's the big talking point. How we found the spray, Chasty? What's your thoughts?
So, I mean, I haven't done too much sports car style racing now that that's a license. my main, I guess, rain thing for that was the Toyota A6, and obviously slow power. Low power, slower speeds. Spray's not as bad. I was able to see the cars in front because of the height. But the one thing that struck me in the Formula cars was that the blinking red light at the back of the car was basically useless. You couldn't see it through the spray, and I don't know if that's necessarily a height thing in the car or whether they need to tweak it. But I had a situation where I was following someone through the new Misano circuit, going through the back section where you've got those really fast sweepers, and I was following behind this car. And once I got onto the line, I was in the spray. He was going along. It seemed like we were going about the same speed. I couldn't see him at all. I couldn't see anything that was in front of me. I was just looking to my left and right, gauging roughly where I was going to sort of come out the corner. And the next thing I know is I see this car just appear in the spray, and he's completely sideways. First thing I see him, completely 90 degrees, and I just go straight into him. Absolutely no indication that the car had spun in front. So I don't know if that's something that iRacing might need to fix. Coming forward, even if you just had the blinking light just flashing through, because if you can see that blinking light just disappear or move off to the left or the right or wherever you can kind of tell the car's spinning or slowing down. But there's no real indication. So I think a lot of people are going to come unstuck in that scenario.
Yeah. So, Braden, I think they've announced that they know the lights are a problem. So the brightness of the lights are a problem. The problem they've got with that is it's not a simple fix of just turn them up brighter. They've apparently breaks a lot of stuff and changes a lot of things. So they're working on a solution for that. I know when I've raced off, you basically, to put the person off behind you, not that there's anyone usually behind me, but you put them off, you could just start swerving in front of them and they can't see a thing. So I found that. But have they mentioned anything else about that, Braden, or what are your thoughts on the spray?
No, not really. More so that they've identified that the brake lights has been a problem like before rain, and that they're something that they know that they have to fix. But it was interesting that they didn't, it's not as simple of a fix as you might think. Obviously, I don't know. I don't have a coding background or a game development background, but it seems like out of all the things that they've managed to do, making lights brighter wouldn't be that difficult. But yeah, Chastity's absolutely right. Like, there's zero indication of what's ahead of you. There was something I noticed straight away, not that I was managing to follow many people in the Sebring test we did in the LMP2, just because there wasn't many cars out and lots of people making mistakes and things like that. But like, as soon as you were behind someone, you're guessing where to go. Like, I felt completely helpless following people to the point where I'm like almost thinking to myself, okay, I think the turn is going to be about here. Like, I know the distance between the last turn and the next turn in the dry. I'm just going to hope that I start turning at the right time. And as Chesty said, kind of looking in your left and right screens, just sort of hoping that you see that you're still somewhere on the track and that you're not, it's not too late and you're about to go over some curbs or something like that, which is going to make it incredibly difficult in those close races where people are super tight and super close. And also probably going to make it pretty difficult for people on single screens. Because I know that I was doing a lot of my guide work by trying to look left and right and using my peripheral vision to sort of figure out where I was on the circuit. But it hopefully is not going to be far away that the lights and stuff are fixed up, because it's just going to be super important and it's going to be so, so difficult to know what to do or know where the car ahead of you actually is if they don't fix it. I surprised Roy last night just by I overtook him on the straight because he had a bit of a moment and he was going quite slow, and I got in front of him, probably a good, 40, 50 meters ahead of him, and just let go of the accelerator. And he couldn't see that I'd slowed down at all and just drove straight into the back of me and scared the crap out of himself. So it's going to make life very difficult if you can't see anything through the spray. Now, not doing any real life racing experience, I'm guessing it's pretty bad in real life as well, which, number one, makes me just appreciate how absolutely savage real life racing drivers are to drive in those kind of conditions, like, and at night and stuff like that, where the visibility is so low and there's real risk of crashing and hurting yourself or worse. Two, obviously, in the sim world, it's going to make life really, really difficult for drivers and could lead to quite a lot of attrition in races, I suppose.
Yeah, I think once we get into officials, it's going to be very interesting how people start driving, I guess, because SR becomes a real thing. We noticed the other day, I don't know why, I was doing a fair few off tracks and they weren't coming up as off tracks at Le Mans in the wet. I was clearly off the track. I was getting slowdowns and everything, but they weren't even coming up as zero X's. So I don't know if there is a safety rating buffer for wet races or when the track is declared wet. I don't know if that's a thing yet or not, but it will be interesting if people go into IMSA and things like this and they decide, oh, I'm actually going to drive a little bit more sensibly, but I doubt that's the case, Chesty. Sim races don't do that, do they?
No, never.
There's no change from what I'm aware of to any of the zero X's or things like that. I'm pretty sure I saw it read that SR stays identical whether it's wet, not wet.
Yeah, so I don't know what was happening then because I was clearly off track. And I know there are weird stuff where I've had zero X or not even had zero X's and had slowdowns, but I've never had it at Le Mans like I was having. So It was bizarre. But the one thing I did find when I was racing at Le Mans, once again, telling myself not to crash and then immediately crashing on the next corner and then getting stuck in the gravel. Now with the new gravel update, how slow gravel makes you plus the water in it and the power of the Lara. Even the GR86, I found at Nords when I'd gone off into the grass, I couldn't reverse up back upwards. Like I was stuck nose facing the wall, and it was downhill towards the wall. To actually get myself back, I had to go up the hill. Reverse couldn't get the thing anywhere. And the Lara, I sat stuck in that gravel for 30, 40 seconds. Didn't do any damage, didn't hit the wall or anything like that. Almost had to tow because I just physically couldn't get out of the gravel. It was
bizarre. The grass has definitely made a return to its slippery state in the wet. We had a little bit of time with the non-death grass of iRacing and the gravel traps doing a lot more. But it's definitely pretty sketchy. It's actually probably worse than it was before when you go off track in the rain. I was interested, I don't know if either of you know, I feel like I've watched enough real world racing to know the answer to this question, but gravel traps in the wet still work pretty effectively, don't they? Like I was surprised that when I went off into one of the gravel traps that I just didn't slow down at all.
As far as I'm aware, in the wet, they still work, and they work just as effectively, I guess. Yeah, no, I've never seen them be a thing. If Chastity, is that a thing for you to see?
Yeah, they should. Your car should dig into them. So
yeah,
kind of in the way you're trying to pull out. So the way you drive out of those gravel traps, the way it's sort of like you're sinking in when you're accelerating too much. Yeah, that's how I'd imagine it would be. That's a lot of physics though to chuck in.
Mm-hmm.
For that sort of thing. Like if you have it catching the car, then are we increasing the chance of rollovers, that sort of stuff as well. So I wonder if that's something that they might have in the works.
Yeah, for me to get the Dallara out, it was I've had to get this thing into third gear, and I was reversing a little bit then basically starting it in third gear so the wheels weren't spinning as much to slowly creep my way out. And even when you got on the grass, it was even just as bad. But I was shocked at, like I said, 30, 40 seconds I spent to get out of this thing, and it's I wasn't expecting it to be that bad. But it's good. I don't mind if, you know, it punishes mistakes because things happen like that in races. And generally a gravel trap you're not going to get out of anyway if you get in there with a Dallara. So
yeah, I wonder if there's a bit of a stop gap that they've put in there as well. They've made it really slippery and it's really hard to get out. However, if you just very carefully ease on the accelerator and keep it very slow, you seem to actually get out quite easily. Mm. And once you start building up your speed, you can tend to get out okay. So it almost feels sort of a little bit unnatural how you can actually get out. Like in some scenarios, you feel like, okay, I'm in this gravel trap, I'm going to be stuck forever. But they kind of know, well, sim racing, we want people to be able to get out, and maybe the physics aren't quite there, so maybe they thought, okay, we'll sort of mangle with it, the physics, just a little bit, just to allow people to get out in those scenarios.
And I guess the caveat to that is you can't have it both ways. You can't have it slow you down enough that if you go in there too hot that it's actually going to do its job and slow you down, but also have it not too sticky that you can't get out if you do manage to slow down. So it's kind of double-edged sword. Which one do you want the most, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I also wonder whether what we're noticing is that we're actually coming off the corners a bit faster. It's kind of a weird thing to say because in the rain, generally you'd expect you'd be going a little bit slower. But as soon as you lose control of the car in those scenarios, the brakes do nothing. Like you just maintain that speed and your car just rotates. So I wonder if we're just hitting the gravel traps a little bit quicker than we're thinking we are because of those rain conditions.
Yeah, and especially since the last grass update as well, where you were slowing down a lot before you were getting to any gravel traps and things like that. That's actually a good point. You probably could be right.
Yeah, correct.
Any locking up in the wet, it doesn't change your speed at all. You go in one direction and one direction only. I had an experience today at Nords in practice, luckily before the race started. Just as you come around the big sweeping right-hander just after the first little complex of corners, I noticed on my relative I had Will Ford behind me. And I'm like, Will Ford, I know that name. Yes, I know who that is. in a GT3, I'm in an 86, and I just went around there in the cold wets, taking it like I normally take it in a warm wets, and I spun, the back end just came out, and I pirouetted perfectly. I did about a 720 or more and didn't change direction of the car, didn't, like, I wasn't, at no stage did I get any grip whatsoever. I just spun on the spot and kept on going forward, and he just kept right around the right-hand side of me without even having to worry about where I was going to grip and go off. There's just nothing. Once you lose it, and especially I think I just got the wheel, the back left wheel onto the grass, and that just, that's what started it, and then there was just no stopping it. And I didn't feel any loss in momentum or anything. I just quickly gained control eventually when I faced straight, and off I went again. So
gained a couple of tenths too, so the sound of it.
Yeah, it was great. We do have a lot of comments to get through, so I probably should start reading some of these. Is there any other stories or thoughts before we get onto all these questions and other discussion points we've got here?
No, just it was pretty cool to see within, like, you know, 30 minutes of rain being up that people in the community already managed to hack the iRacing, not allowing you to put cars that don't have wet tires in wet conditions. So shout out to Bo Albert. He had a video up of him attempting to drive around circuit Gilles Villeneuve in the supercar on slicks with it being pouring down with rain. So that was pretty funny to see, and like people going around dirt tracks in pouring rain and stuff like that. So just a shout out to doesn't matter how much testing. Yeah. It doesn't matter how much testing you can do. There's no saving you from the community. It just, they always find ways to break stuff.
Chasty, how long did it take you before you on purpose went out on a track on slicks just to see how good you were?
That was Sherpa, wasn't it?
Yeah, I held, it wasn't heavy rain, but I kept the dry tires on a little bit longer than I should in one of the practice sessions, and yeah, it's treacherous out there. It's very, very difficult. The first thing I tried was actually wet tires on the dry track, because I wanted to see what kind of effect, what kind of disadvantages you were going to get, because very interested to see whether the, I guess we're going back to the balancing again, whether you can get away driving the wets on the dries for a while.
And how did you find that?
It's like driving in the wet. It's very similar. It's actually quite good. I was impressed, and it's funny because without having actual real life racing experience in the wet or driving on wet tires, it's funny how intuitive it all felt. Like, it felt like, yeah, that makes sense. There is grip here, but it's much less than slicks, and that's what I'd expect. It's going to be a harder, it's going to be a different compound, and obviously less contact patch, and that's what it felt like. It felt like the car was skating around just a little bit.
Mm. It was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah. One other point that I've actually haven't heard too much about is the soundtrack that they've put into this thing. It's unbelievable. The rain as you pick up speed as it hits your car, the sound of the puddles, just the splashing and stuff as you're sort of going over, going through the puddles and then over the curbs and all that stuff. It's actually phenomenal. It's something you can't really describe. You need to sort of experience for yourself. But it's amazing not being able to hear your own engine over the sound of the rain hitting your car.
Yeah, I think we talked about the other night too, where you hear the tires, starting to lose grip, where they're really biting on, and that noise sensation you get, so you know you're on the limit when you're on dries and slicks. It's a very different sound on wets, but it's still there, but it's a very, very different feeling. Even the force feedback, I think the work that they've done with the force feedback, this wet weather racing is so much more enjoyable, and it's better. It's so much better with a direct drive wheel, from my understanding. Like just even as you said, hitting a puddle with the rip down on the steering wheel on that side, and how it feels heavy to get it around corners at times. I think it just makes if you've got the proper rig, this is just so much more intense as well.
You have to do a lot of work with the wheel. Like, there's a lot more going on. You're doing a lot more work, a lot more control with your with your feet, with your pedals, and like you just have to have really quick hands. It's not, you know, turn in, slowly open up the steering as you put the throttle down. Like halfway through a turn, you might get a little kick, and then you're off, and then you're on, and then there's just a lot more going on.
I think the interesting thing I found too was you noticed at first is driving, the rain had just started coming down and Braden was out there on slicks in Sebring. He couldn't even get traction to get the car moving. Like you couldn't go more than probably 100, 150 K an hour you're maxing out the, might have been J-Mac then, was maxing out the revs. So all your car was doing was spinning in third, fourth, fifth gear on the straights. You got no power because you had zero traction. So it's not the fact that you couldn't even do corners properly. You just can't get traction to drive forward with the slicks on the wets, which is amazing. So I don't know. We'll see how good we all enjoy this in 3 months' time when our SRs are all back down to rookie classes again. We'll go from there.
Mm. Shout out to the Bathurst 12-hour for getting me back to 4.99 before the end of the season.
Well, that's it. So Sebring is the next thing. We are getting ready for that as well. So that's only a couple weeks' time. It's going to be amazing, a 12-hour race. This is where this system is going to shine. Like, cool, you got IMSA hour races and things like that, or however long they are these days. But a 12-hour race, we're going to have, like, we're talking on track, and at Sebring, we're like, we had to learn the turn numbers because we're like, it's raining at turn three, it's raining at turn four, it's not raining back straight, and all that kind of stuff was so interesting. So your spotter's got to be right on ball, because it literally is like Nords. I was driving today, and in the official, which is supposed to be just heavy rain the whole way around, at least medium rain all the way around, I got to a part of Nords where it wasn't even raining anymore. And the system is that in tune where even when I set up the server the other day for Sebring, it stopped raining for a good 10 minutes in the middle of the session where it was supposed to be raining the whole time. And all of a sudden, everyone's like, it's raining in the back straight again. And then it just rolled in. And then it got real heavy. And you could tell there was a very big difference between heavy rain, medium rain, and light rain. And you could tell that it was getting far harder to drive on, but physically see and hear it so much better straight away. But yeah, lots of stuff there. Let's get on to Facebook. We're going to start with the first person who replied, which is young Brian Borg. His comment is the front screen needs to get dirty from the rain / dirt. Chasty, the wiper blades, what do you think of, what's your thoughts on them first? And I think obviously rain and dirt should start smearing it, but are you let down by with what the wipers end up being?
To be honest, I wasn't sure what to expect going in. I didn't know how well their visual aspects were going to be. So I actually kind of had low expectations, thinking that they're probably going to be more physics driven first and then graphics later. So I was kind of actually surprised and pretty happy with how the rain droplets appear on the screen, how they move off the windshield, as they move up and to the sides depending on what the shape of the windshield was, and also the animations around the wipers as well. I was fairly impressed with it, but there's definitely some work that needs to go into it. Just for example, just the sheer density of the amount of drops on the windscreen, it's quite low. Mm-hmm. So there were times when I was driving the GDP, I gave the GDP a spin. I say spin, I mean that literally. I was spinning a lot.
I was going to say you're brave.
and what I found was every time I reset the car to get it out of the wall, I'd realize halfway around the next lap that I actually forgot to put the wipers on. And it's just really not that necessary. Like, it's great for the immersion of it, but it's actually not necessary. You can clearly see through it. And there's a couple of things I think they need to do. They need the dirt. I'm not too worried about the dirt so much. They definitely need more rain droplets on the screen. But the thing that's really missing is the fog. There's no fogging up around the windshield at all. And I think the fog is probably the thing that's really going to get people. And that's the thing that really sort of wreaks havoc in real life, I think, is the fog and dealing with that. I don't know how far they'd want to go with that. If you want the whole screen fogging up, probably don't want that. but at least the effect around the edges to make it look like that there's actually fog, there's moisture in the air, the humidity's gone up. I think that's actually pretty important. So that's something I'd like to see. Yeah, Braden?
I was just going to say, we have to bind buttons for windscreen wipers. We have to bind buttons for demisters. We have about 65 buttons on our steering wheels to be able to drive. I totally agree with you with the amount of, or the density of the drops on the windscreen. Like, I reckon in the, I don't know, maybe what have I done? Maybe 2.5 hours worth of driving. It's not very much. But I reckon I would have used the windscreen wipers for about 30 seconds. Like, I realized really quickly they were almost more of a distraction to me than they were necessary in any way, shape, or form. Like, it didn't really feel like it made any difference whatsoever. Good for immersion, yeah, sure. But at the end of the day, if it's going to detract from my concentration, I'd just leave it off.
Yeah, I didn't even realize, but yeah, what I always felt with the windows is, like, the first time I saw it was in Nords and it was just raining from the start. So you didn't have the transition period at all. And it just felt clear. Like, you could clearly see through. And I think you're spot on with the fog and things like that. And as Brian suggests, maybe dirt, but it definitely the fog. Not enough water off the wiper area, I guess. But it looks brilliant when it hits your window and it moves up and off and how the droplets move. But yeah, it's missing something because it just looks too clear. And the brain just goes, that's not right. It's because that's not how it should be. So I think the fog is a very good example. We'll go from that into the next two comments, which are about this very thing, but in open wheelers, because I haven't done the open wheeler stuff, so I didn't even know this was a thing. But Matthew Harriet says, I'm disappointed the open wheelers, the rain doesn't bead off the visor. It appears on the windscreen of the tin top cars, so I feel it's a missed opportunity. And then Troy Davidson comes in with, very impressed first outings, few things like no rain on the visor and open wheelers, no more rain build up on a windscreen with wipers off, but very, being very picky, overall physics are unreal, graphics very good, 3D immersion in VR is awesome, and the whole Tempest functionality is what it offers is awesome. The thing I didn't quite mention before was that transition is very jarring. So if you're out there racing, you see the raindrops coming down. There's nothing on the windscreen at all. There's literally nothing here. All you see is drops coming in the air and you driving into them, but nothing physically hits. But then all of a sudden there is a switch point where it goes to the animation of the water coming up. And there's no in between of little drops on your windscreen or no buildup of, now it's starting to hit it. It is an on and off situation, which is extremely jarring. And once again, as Troy said, being very nitpicky here, but that's one of the things I'd like to see a different part of. Did you notice that at all, Braden, the other night?
Yeah, definitely noticed that there was the no rain on the visor. I guess throwing back to Chasty's talk before about, you know, where were they going to be at? No, most likely going to be more physics based and worry about graphics later. That's kind of been iRacing's motto in a sense forever, right? They get the physics stuff correct initially and worry about graphics stuff never or less. You know, everyone picks on iRacing for not being the most beautiful looking game, but in my opinion, it looks good and good and by far good enough to be immersed in it. It was definitely noticeable that there was an issue. Or not an issue, but the visor water's not there. I had a bit of an issue myself. I don't know if it's a little bug or something they'll have to fix up at some point when we were racing at Phillip Island in the F4 and Chasty and Shervo and Roy and stuff were going, oh, like the rain's coming down. I'm driving around and I cannot see any rain anywhere. And, you know, car 50 meters behind me is telling me it's pouring down with rain and I can't see anything. But what I could see is when I looked in my wing mirrors, I could see the drops of rain on the paint of the car, but I wasn't seeing any rain whatsoever actually in front of me. And it was really quite weird. Then I started to see the spray coming out the back in the rear vision mirror, but still no water on the screen or droplets or drops of rain coming from the sky. And I actually pulled over, towed. And as soon as I towed in the replay mode, I could see all of the rain. And a few of the guys are saying, oh, you know, maybe it's something to do with your graphics or whatever, but I hadn't changed my graphics from when we ran on Wednesday night and I've got everything turned up to full. I got back in the car and as soon as I got back in the car, I could see all the rain. So it was a bit weird. I'm not quite sure what had happened, but I certainly wouldn't want that to have happened in an actual race where everyone knows it's raining and I've got no idea until it's too late. So, yeah, that was a bit interesting. But, yeah, totally agree with what the guys said. Definitely need something on the visor and the open wheels if you're thinking about it. And if any of the types of cars, you'd need to see the rain coming onto the actual screen where your vision kind of is, you would think it would be open wheelers. Obviously, it's going to be a bit more difficult to drive, I suppose, and maybe that's why they haven't done it initially, because if you think about that screen is, literally, 10, 15 centimeters from your eye, the visor. So the droplets are going to, in theory, look really big and take up quite a lot of the space. So I don't know if that's got something to do with it, but it was definitely a glaring omission. I don't know what you thought, Chasty, between driving the F4 and then jumping in the GI86 last night, but it's definitely a big difference.
Yeah, I couldn't find anywhere to back it up, but I had heard that they had some issues with the Formula cars getting the droplets to look right on the screen. They couldn't really transfer what they were doing on the windscreen straight directly to your screen as a visor, whether it obscured the view too much or there were some other graphical issues or some limitations in their engine or the way that they were doing the modeling for it. I'm not sure. But I couldn't actually find any anywhere that actually said that they were actually working on it or anything. But my guess would be that they've got that in the background and they're probably working on it. That said, with the amount of spray issues and that you have in those Formula cars, it's probably a bit of a godsend that you actually don't have anything else on the visor, because you're already dealing with too much at the moment. So it might be for the best while they sort that out. But I think there's always going to be things that they can improve on and we can get nitpick and stuff like that. But to be honest, I reckon as a development team, they're pretty good at actually working around those nitpicks. And they do actually let us know that they're working on certain things. So I think in the next few weeks, they'll probably come out and say what they're working on and what they've got going in the future once they've probably got a bit of a time frame. So they're usually pretty good at delivering on those little nitpicks that we all have as sim racers. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they deal with all that.
Yeah, definitely. I am generally surprised about how well this worked for it. I think that's what they're really good at, is when they put something out like this, it doesn't come out a hot mess at all. Okay, so Braden had that one bug. We had the servers got overloaded because everyone was obviously trying to get into it at once. We had the no practice for races bug with a few series, which they got in and fixed within sort of 24 hours. That's about it. Like, everything else has run so smoothly, and I think that's a pretty big effort for them, to be honest. So,
yeah, it was a big update as well. Like, it wasn't huge. They changed the UI as well, so there was lots of things in there.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about UI, tracks, new cars that they've added, any of that. So the whole splitting of the I rating for road courses as well. All this happened, we're not even going to get time to talk about that as well. So I'll quickly jump on to Matty Joy. That finishes off the Facebook ones. He's got a couple in Discord as well. But although I'm impressed by the model, I'd like to know what the improvements they have moving forward, which is what we're just talking about. So I think they'll come out and say that once everything is settled down. Light brightness, having the rain on the windscreen limit visibility. At the moment, you can drive 100% rain without the wipers, which we touched on. Spray density. It's really interesting concept for endurance drivers being prepared for any conditions. So pretty much echoing pretty much what we've said the whole way through. So thank you for that, Matty Joy. Then we go to Discord, which I need to just quickly fill some air while I get it to that position. Scotty Rankin, who was supposed to join us on the podcast tonight, but time always conflicts with us and him at the moment. So without real world experience, boy, do you feel at sea. A system designed to reward those who put in time and aren't brave on the brakes. The Wet and Wild week 13 sessions have been the bane of my, yeah, I think I can break deeper mindset, which is what you were talking about before, Braden. He goes on to say, no greater feeling than putting your foot on the brake, locking up and having no other options than to cross your arms and enjoy the slow, slow slide into the fence. Track is always wetter than it appears. how good is it going out on slicks when slicks well in advance of being ready? And I think this is what J-Mac and Tim especially, they took the slicks on after the session had dried out at Sebring, or not dried out, stopped raining, and they chucked it on way too early. And they were just having a blast going down the straight, because you put your foot down on the straight and this thing would start fishing for no reason other than it wanted to all the way down the straight. It was an absolute handful to drive and they loved it. And that's what they're really enjoying at the moment.
Yeah, the only thing that Scott got wrong in that is didn't say enjoy the slow, slow slide to the fence. It's not a slow, slow slide to the fence at all. It's a very quick and painful death.
I think it's the whole thing of you know well in advance that as soon as you make that mistake, you know that you're going in. Yeah. We're in the dry, you think, oh, no, I can fix this. As soon as you make that 150, 200 meter out mistake, you are just watching yourself for the next 150, 200 meters going, there's nothing. Because putting the foot on harder, on the brake harder, or pumping it doesn't help, because once you've locked and that's the end of it.
Yeah. I really liked the comment that Vernie put in there. Yes, I don't know if you want me to read that one out to save you some of the German pronunciations.
Because look, Matty Joy and Scotty Rankin go back to forth a little bit here, but there's Vernie was a great comment. So you go for that.
Yeah. So Nathan is one of the lucky ones who have been over to Germany to actually drive the Nordschleife, and he did the Touristfahrten experience and got to drive before the end of the day. And stayed in a hotel overnight and then got to drive the next morning. So unfortunately for him, in the middle of the night before he got to the track the next day, it rained really, really hard. And as he expected, had a wet track for the next day. So he was saying how he was really worried about going off and hitting a barrier. And obviously the insurance and the repairs on the car would be pretty significant if he happened to do that. So he stayed up half the night and pretty much just watched YouTube onboards of the wet line. And a lot of what it basically taught him watching those was how to stay away from the apexes, especially at ones with the elevation changes as the water just streams down towards them, obviously as they're the lowest point. For example, the carousel was originally designed to drain the water away. So he drove the wet track the next day and it was certainly much safer on the wet line. And he was saying how at times when you had to cross over from one side of the track to the other or move over puddles, it just resulted in you losing traction and almost losing control of his bows. So he said it was really quite scary. And he said from the onboards he's watched on iRacing since it's been released, and especially the stuff at Nords, it basically looked exactly the same as what he learned when he was over there and got to drive it in real life. So I thought that was a really interesting comparison for someone who has actually had the chance to drive a car over on the Nordschleife in the wet. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And shout out to Vernie. Get well soon, mate. I hope you can get back in the rig with us eventually. I know things aren't going the best for you. But everything in that lead up, those couple of days lead up, especially when they gave the builds to GT3 drivers and they just sat there and went, wow, they've nailed this. This just explains how, like, these people who have done this for a living in the past and know exactly what to do, and when they took those skills and brought them into this new weather system, and it all worked, and that was definitely the best way to drive it. Is an absolute well done job to iRacing for getting it to that level, and from the start deciding we're not going to do this until we have it to that level of perfection and that little simulation. They're talking about how they want this to then encourage a whole heap of people who then go into real life racing, be better at wet racing when they go into real life racing because they've driven it on the sim and they've got all this understanding of it. But even as you, I don't know if you saw it, Chassis, but when you're racing and your track is drying out and you're sitting there going, well, is it dry enough to go on the racing line now if I break? Or is it, or, and you actually start moving around looking for the dry line and things like that. Did you ever think it was going to be that accurate or hoped it was going to be that accurate?
I had the assumption that it was going to be very accurate. I didn't know how well it was going to work, how difficult it was going to be. But yeah, it's surprised me. Even with all the expectations I have, iRacing has always been really good with rolling out content. And yeah, as you were saying before, the limited amount of bugs and how well the game sort of works or the sim works on a release.
Don't say game, mate. Don't.
Well, do it. I say it in the context of how many other developers out there that put games together. They launch something and it's just an absolute mess and nothing works for the next 6 months. And I know iRacing has this thing where they launch all their features and it has to work for the next week when the official season starts. They've only got one week of grace. So when they put it out, they definitely make sure that everything works. And they're probably the only developers out there who are actually doing it. I can't think of any, like even all the great developers over the past 10 years, they've all succumbed to launching products that weren't finished, but this thing is just polished. It's so nice.
And I love the fact that they were supposed to have this out in December and they held off and they said, no, it's not ready. And they've just so they can release it in this way. They've known, you could tell from the social media posts they've done over the last probably month and a half, 2 months since they really started unveiling it, how confident they were in it and how impressed internally they were. Like they were proud of this thing when they were promoting this leading up to it.
Yeah, and they should be. They should be very proud of it. Yeah, and I'm just amazed to see what it's going to be like. I'm really looking forward to, I hope I will be amazed in a year's time, but yeah, really looking forward to seeing how this system is working in a year's time and how much.
That's it.
This how is, much work yeah they're
the gonna entry be level in. Of weather
this is the start. Cyberpunk 2077 is playable after a year. Imagine they're already at this point how good it's gonna be in a year's time.
So we've heard the rumors of the graphical, like we talked about the last episode, I think the engine upgrade for the actual graphics system, like this thing's gonna look better in like 1 to 2 years' time.
That's exactly right, yeah. And that's what I'm thinking about. I'm looking forward to those screenshots. I was blown away with their initial screenshots that they put out when they started teasing and they're saying, hey, look, we've got rain in our sim running right now. That was pretty exciting. And that was was that over a year ago? I've lost track of time. Yeah. I don't know how to keep time.
Might be more.
I was thinking it might be two. I feel like it was like, wasn't it like two Daytona 24s ago where they first showed the first little sneak peek of it or something? Or... Yeah, that's it was a long time ago, yeah.
And that looked fantastic.
We podcast for a year and we were talking about it well over a year before that.
Yeah, I guess that looked fantastic as well. So, yeah, I can't wait for those screenshots when the new game engine's being teased. And then we'll have to wait another 6 years, I guess.
launched.
But it will be perfect. We know that if it takes them that long, it's going to be perfect. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you go.
There you go.
Oh, well, mine's kind of back off topic a little bit. So if you finish off.
I was literally going to ask you, what do you see yourself racing over the next 12 weeks?
Well, I sort of made the commit. I think we talked about it last podcast because I reckon we did one when they announced it was everything that was coming and those kind of things. And it was with the license split. So I kind of the week before that had finally got announced, sort of committed to trying to get better in the sort of IMSA GT3, sort of the more cars used in the majority of the special events. And basically had gone, yeah, cool, R rating, whatever. I'm done with worrying about you. I'm just going to try and get better at those cars so that I can be more representative and, you know, hopefully get a better special event finish at some point in time. So that's the plan, I think, to jump into the IMSA races and the VRS races when they're at my sort of the tracks that I want to race at to start with. Unfortunately, I don't think there will be much rain. That definitely won't be in the VRS series because some of the cars aren't eligible, the McLaren and the Ford. I don't know if you guys have had a look at the schedules, but I was trying to work out what... like rounds and what like series are going to have rain, and there was lots of series that had I can't remember the terminology of the word. I'll see if I can open one up, but it was like constant weather, I think was the term that was used quite a bit throughout the series. It was like constant weather and then there was some others that said something different. I'm just trying to pop it up as I scroll through.
Yeah, I did notice when that PDF week 13 stuff that there was a difference in terminology just in those series.
Yeah, so lots of the series just have constant weather, which I don't know if it means no rain, like constant weather fixed sky. but like all of the main series sort of have that. So
they were talking beforehand that it would be some weeks. There will be a lot of weeks that there would be weeks that would be eligible for rain, and there will be weeks that aren't eligible for rain.
Yeah,
what they were talking about in the lead up to it.
Yeah. So even in the IMSA races, they all say constant weather. So I don't know. Constant weather could just mean it's gonna rain
the whole time.
I suppose. Yeah. And it's not going to be sort of mixed up in between the two. So, but yeah, the plan will be probably the LMP2, some GT3 driving. And that's what I'm trying to sort of commit to, and sort of try and improve in those cars. Cause like I said, that's what all the big special events are in. And that's what I sort of really want to achieve at some point, is have a really successful, special event. That's sort of the plan.
Yeah. I think, the easiest way to do it, especially for short races, and we're talking, let's say, the half-hour races, it's wet or it's dry. There's no point having it change over. With the hour-long races, hit or miss, but I think constant weather will be referring to the fact that it's going to be either wet or it's going to be dry in every single server you jump in. But they did talk about during the week the fact that no two sessions should be the same anymore, but
two time slots, I think, was the terminology.
So anything can happen. I'm trying to find it myself here, but Chasty, what do you see yourself driving over this season?
Hard to say. I mean, it's really supercars. Hard for me to get it's hard it's hard for me to get away from the supercars, just based on the amount of league support that there is for it. It's primarily what our team runs, as well as Scops as well. It's really hard to drive other cars and then get back into the supercar and then try and qualify for Scops. That's a whole new, that's a whole other kettle of fish. And I'm sure Braden understands that as well, because a lot more variation. I mean, for me, I like having a good mix of different vehicles. Like, the Aussie Car Series is really great for that, and this year it's going to be pretty good for that too. So I've always got that time aside for a slow open wheeler or what other tin top they want to run this year. So but the other thing I really want to get into is the Super Formula side, and I've never really been a big fan of the old F3 now, the F3 car that's been around for a long time. Never really been a big fan of that particular car. Just didn't really like the way that it feels. But this new Super Formula Light car has come out, and I'm really enjoying the feel of that. So I'm going to be racing supercars probably. It's pretty much a stock standard thing. It's a namestay. But I think I'll be branching out more to the F3 and the Super Formula side of things, trying to just drive the Super Formula cars a bit more, and especially with the rain as well. There's no other way to experience the rain, and I think at this point, if you want to be competitive going into the future as well, you really need to learn how these weather systems are going to work. And it might be that I don't race supercars as much just this season, just to get into the rain side of things, until either the current supercars get rain or the new ones come out, and then that's where rain comes in. So
it's a good point, actually. It's a if not now, like when? If you're not going to go and practice and try to learn how to drive in the wet now while everyone's making mistakes and learning, it's going to make it very difficult in the future when people have put hundreds of hours into getting better at it and you're hundreds of hours behind. It's going to be quite difficult.
Especially if you've got a high I rating going in. makes it difficult switching cars, let alone dealing with a new scenario and you're racing against aliens all the time. So and especially if you've farmed all your I rating in supercars as well. That's and makes it very difficult. Like unintentional, but that's the way that it's sort of fallen. So I'll pay that back, but I'm sure with the license split that formula rating will swiftly drop down, especially if I can't find the first gear off the start.
I guess one thing I sort of was thinking about last night is, what do you think rain does for participation and retention, especially based around endurance races? Like, people already give up very quickly in like 12-hour races and stuff like that, especially in slightly lower splits where, you know, you crash out after 2 hours and you're like, oh, I'm done. Do you think the idea of rain will keep more people around thinking there's a chance other people will make a mistake? Or do you think the idea of rain will cause more incidents, therefore have less people finishing at the end? And we might see, you know, splits with only 5 or 10 cars finishing the race out of, you know, 50 or whatever. That was just something I thought about.
I think
double-edged sword, that one.
Yeah, I think for starters, what we've seen already is a lot of people wanting to come back in because I think there was a lot of people that found the racing stale, boring, or they'd got over it. And I think this rain is something that's been obviously been on the works for a long time, and it adds that extra element of something a bit, lack of a better term, spicy into the mix to get people interested and excited again. I think you'll see the first couple people might feel, hey, this is my chance to actually get one because all I've got to do is survive. We're going to get to Sebring, and it's going to be the fine 12-hour race that we know no rain in sight. But I think it's a hard one because, like I said, you get people in and, oh, cool, I stuffed up and jumped out. You can't penalize them because you don't want to force them into 12 hours of racing a car that's broken and met multiple laps down. They're just going to cause other people problems. But you do need to punish people who just jump from server to server somehow, and I don't know how to do that. I don't know how they don't piss people off but yet try and force people to hang around.
I think it just reiterates how desperately there needs to be an upgrade to the safety car on the road side of things, especially for special events. Like I think that's the next thing that they need to have implemented sooner rather than later, so that it can add that next sort of bit to the endurance racing. You know, I know it might suck if you have a split that's got, you know, 57 safety cars over the course of your 6 hours at Watkins Glen or whatever, but I think, you know, getting a safety car out based on some kind of set of rules, whether it's like the oval, if a certain amount of cars are going a certain speed or facing a certain direction, then that triggers a safety car, or if someone has to tow, then that triggers a safety car, but then that's obviously open to people exploiting that as well. And, you know, if anyone that's a lap down for that one lap of the safety car or two laps of the safety car or whatever gets one wave around and sort of keeps people more in the race, I think that's definitely the next evolution of the endurance racing on that side of things. Do you think that will help keep people in the race, Chasty?
Hard to say. I do feel like the numbers are going to shoot up, especially over the first couple of special events, just because the rain's come in. There's a lot of people subbing back in, and there's a lot of people who are probably thinking about, oh, maybe I'll do it a special event. Maybe they'll give it a crack now. Maybe they don't feel like they're super confident on the pace. As Braden said, with no safety cars, the people who have got unbelievable pace, they just go and they just drive off, and they'll be laps ahead. So it doesn't really give you much chance. But I guess even without the safety cars, just the introduction of rain just adds that little bit of a question mark. Do we take the 10 minutes of repairs? Do we lose a couple of laps in that someone else could easily crash? I mean, I've seen a lot of people leave splits when if they just stayed in, they probably would have ended up in a fairly reasonable spot just because, just by sticking around and just doing laps and other people making mistakes already. And that's just going to increase with the rain for sure. It's so easy to make a little mistake just in a 10-minute race we're doing, or 15-minute race in the week 13. Imagine how many mistakes there's going to be in just over the course of a 12-hour race at Bathurst, for example. It's going to be, really interesting to see how that's going to work. I don't know how they would deal with the server hopping at all either. Being part of a team, I've got another team that I do the special events with. We've had a few people in the last few special events who have raced on multiple teams. So they've jumped out of the car on one server and then jumped into another team running on another server to fill in. And they've done, the 48 hours of Daytona. Like they've done some amazing stuff, and it's probably not the best idea. And there's been discussion in the team whether it's the best idea to do that. They haven't really taken anyone out because they're too tired or done anything particularly wrong, and it hasn't hurt it. And it's got another car running in another server. So I think there's definitely a balance there, which way you go. But I can't see iRacing making any changes, at least for the foreseeable future, until they work out what is going to be the attitude towards it now that there's rain in there.
So, yeah, I think the Daytona 24 was a good example. I think that was touting their best numbers in any endurance ever. So it's not like they've really got to be concerned because the numbers seem to keep on going up for special events.
Yeah, it's, I guess it wasn't concern in terms of total numbers for entering the special events, more the like numbers staying in your race, like out of the 50 cars that start the race with you, like do instead of having 35 cars are 15 finishing because there's so many crashes and there's no possible way to get back into the race without safety cars that people are like, well, stuff that I'm not sticking around for the next 8.5 hours with no way of getting back unless other people crash, which they obviously most likely will. But it's just always been something that I noticed in special events, like, you know, 5 car pile up on the first two laps and there's 5 cars gone for the 12 hours because they're not sticking around with, yeah, you know, 5 minutes of damage. So
yeah, and like I said, it's a hard one because, you know, you can't penalize people and force them in there.
No.
Because, you know, their race is literally ruined or over. But I guess that's where you start talking about fast repairs or a fast repair for an endurance race and things like that to sort of quell those concerns. But that's a dicey topic, I think, it's, at times as well. But I think we did focus on that last time. But I think the safety car for road racing enduros, and even if it's just a competitive safety car that they put in once every 2 hours or so to sort of give those people a chance to get back on lead laps and get laps back and do repairs and stuff like that, not to have to be triggered by an actual event on track is a way around it. But I don't know. It's wait and see. We've got a Sebring 12-hour in what, about 2.5 weeks' time, where we'll get a lot of our answers there, how many people are left at the end of that 12-hour race. And luckily that we go through the calendar ourselves internally, and there's not a lot of enduros in this part of the year. So the special events are all sort of back-ended for road racing. So I'll have a little bit of time to get this sorted out, but I do hope that the safety car is something they're working on in the background. Because that is a big step. So, is there anything else we've missed, Braden?
No.
Besides everything else other than rain that got dropped in the patch that we haven't talked about. We're not going to.
Yeah, no, not off the top of my head. I guess there is the lingering, I suppose, idea of the next couple of cars coming towards iRacing that will be rain-enabled. So, I know that the next, for example, enduro after Sebring in May is the Nürburgring 24. So at the moment, that wouldn't be able to have rain because the GT3 Cup car and the GT4 cars and the TCR cars don't have rain at the moment. And then after that is Watkins Glen, which is all good to go for rain. But then July 19 is 24 hours of Spa. So if the other GT3s aren't released by then, which I think they probably will be, but the McLaren and the Ford Mustang, if they haven't been released by then there's another special event that wouldn't have the opportunity to have rain as well. So I guess it'll just be what cars are we getting next with rain, and are we going to get them in time for them to be involved in the special events, I guess would be the next step for iRacing.
We didn't talk about the partnership with TCR that's just been announced as well. I think that's a pretty big lead to, I think you'll get those cars will be next, as you mentioned, for the Nürburgring as well. But I think they'd be pretty keen to get those into a bit of wet weather racing as well. For those supercars fans out there, Bathurst 1000 is in September, so that's when you're going to get wet tyres at some stage before then, I would assume, because you can't do Bathurst 1000 without rain coming over the hill, can you, anymore?
I think you'd be pushing it to have I don't know if they would be putting too much effort into the supercar with the fact they'd be trying to bring Gen 3 out. So I don't know. You might be pushing
Gen 3 is ready to go, Chesty, isn't it? Come on. It's just press a button, load it up.
Well, I assume so. I don't know what they're doing. They're taking a long time to push one button, aren't they?
It is. It is just, it's there ready to go. Come on, just press the button. They did talk about supercars pre this thing, so I think it's not far away, but we'll see. I think you're right. I think the special events, by the end of the year, do all the road cars have wet tires?
No. Short answer, I don't think so.
No problems. What else is there that because Indy doesn't. Does Indy have wets? Indy races in the wet or not?
I'm assuming they would for their road courses. Yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah, because they've got that whole partnership going on as well. Anyway, we'll see what's coming up. Hopefully, once this all dies down to keep the momentum going, they'll start announcing things like that. So I'd say there'll be a big lead up to Sebring, and then once that's done, they'll start announcing what it's going to be in season 3 by about, I guess, that midway mark, week 6, week 7. But I think we've talked long enough. I think we've kept Chastity away from actually racing long enough. And I need to go to bed soon because it is so late here. It's 8:30 at night. That's late for an old man like me. So any final words, Chastity, on this new weather system? Don't say the word tempest because you're not allowed to anymore.
Not so much the weather system, but there is one little nugget that I actually found while I was doing our very important research before the podcast.
Oh, shit. Did we cover all your topics yet? Because you're the first guest to come along with topics. We can't get them all?
No, we've got most of them. I mean, look, okay. I just sort of, just jotted down a couple of things, some little tidbits that, and that's iRacing's words as well, that may have been missed in the very long list of little improvements and stuff that they've added. But going back to the safety car, we're talking about safety car development. The safety car driver has a name.
Yeah. Was it Fred or something?
It's Fred. That's exactly right. So you've seen it. The pace car driver is Fred. And I hear that he's gone through some extensive pace car driver classes, including the Carlos Sainz School of Smoothness. And a class also known as what is and isn't a pit lane. So some improvements to the pace car there. Maybe maybe going towards a better road racing usage, maybe not just the oval. So I thought I might sneak that in for the listeners who've made it this far into the podcast.
No one, in other words.
Yeah.
Roy Clark will be here. should have called the pace car driver Roy.
Yeah, exactly. Pace car driver doesn't drive that fast, does he? We got too fast. Sorry, too fast. I would have called him Tim because Tim drives about that speed, doesn't he, around Red Bull Ring?
Yeah, when his pit limit is on, he most certainly does. Yeah.
Look, thank you, Chastity, for joining us tonight. Where can people find you? What's your stream? Oh, hold on. Braden wants to say any final words, Braden?
Yeah, mine's not necessarily rain related, but I just wanted to give a little shout out to the guys over at Tech One for letting me and Tim do the Bathurst 12 hour with them. Me, Tim, and Julian jumped in a car together and had a pretty decent day out, to be fair. Managed to get an 11th in the split we're in. We're looking pretty good. We only got one little tangle up when a car that was like 7 laps down and 41st or something decided to rear end Julian into the cutting after about 3 seconds.
The cutting,
before.
The best place to dive bomb. What are you talking about?
Oh, about 3 seconds before it happened, I'm pretty sure on my stream I said something along the lines of "There's no need for this Porsche to be this close," and then 3 seconds after, rear ended it into the wall. So apart from that, we literally would have had a perfect run and were sitting, I think, 5th at the time or 6th at the time of it happening. So, just a shout out to those guys. It was a really good day and really like professionally run and set up by the people in their team, which was really cool. And then just a shout out to Tim as well.
What up, like us?
Yeah, pretty much. although we've got a spreadsheet now, so it's somewhat professional. Just shout out to Tim as well. Like between me and him, we did like pretty much 7.5 hours worth of driving with both of us getting 0x. So I think it was probably more than that. It was probably about 8 eight and a bit hours worth of driving. It was like 260 odd laps or something, or 220 laps.
Didn't you cut one of their team members like 2 hours in saying he's not allowed to drive or something? Really?
No, he couldn't get in the session. He somehow ended up being registered as crew. So, yeah. So just shout out to the Tech One guys. That was a good day. And that was my best special event finish and probably the one that went the smoothest ever. So it was just, yeah, a good day.
Yes, very well done. Now, can I wrap up the podcast?
Now you can.
Okay. Chasty, thank you for joining us tonight, and thank you for all your wise words of wisdom. Is there any shots you want to have at anyone in the Banner Alliance, and where do you stream so people can go check out your good work?
So I'm on YouTube under James Chasty, and it's a bit of racing, bit of silent treatment. If you want to be completely ignored in the chat, that's the place to go. However,
can confirm.
What you do want to do is tune in right after the race and check out the post-race beef reports with the boys. There's a lot of good banter. We are the Banter Alliance. We have reasonable banter. It's probably terrible. You can probably come in and absolutely school us. We absolutely love that. Shervo is not quite just chopped liver either. So always got to mention the great man. Pity he couldn't be here on tonight. I don't know what he's doing.
He was our first offer, but it didn't go through. It came back with the inbox came back with full. So we just assume he had too many other things on. So we had to go to our second best option. Sorry, Chasty.
No, that's all right. I would have got him on too, to be honest.
I thought it said that we were blocked. That's what I thought it said.
Oh, blocked was it? Is that what it was?
It will be after this. So yeah, yeah. No, check me out on YouTube. James Chasty, JamesChasty with a space in the middle.
Wow. That's fancy, mate. That's really good. I like that. Well done promoing. Braden, do you want to promo anything?
Yeah, if you want to jump over and have a watch of whatever rubbish I'm doing on Twitch or YouTube, it's just the 1D Wade. Or if you want to hear me yelling at clouds or complaining about the upcoming football season, you can follow me on Twitter at Braden Talks.
Do that, people. Also, if you want to, you know, we're 90 minutes into a podcast now. I'm going to, for the first time ever, say go over to www.lockedonlads.com/charity to donate to our Shipbox Rally effort, which is quickly approaching. We do know now what the second dress-up day is. I'm not going to spoil that. I'm going to get Vic on for a bit of a chat at some stage to give an update on the car, the beautiful Scorpion, and we'll announce what that is, so we'll get your best thoughts on what we should do for that as well. But thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, everyone, who took the time to put in feedback for the episode. Thank you, everyone, who has been listening and enjoying the content again. Hopefully, I'll get a few more little interview episodes in between now and the next time we're together, and we'll have some stuff to update on what's going on in iRacing at that stage. But until then, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye for now.